Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. It's been a fun week at Cherry Bomb HQ, and we have a great show for you today. But first, let's thank our sponsor, Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school with locations around the globe. We've got a great sweepstakes going on with Le Cordon Bleu. Hopefully you all know about that and have entered. I would enter if I could, but I can't enter. But you could win culinary classes in Paris, London, or Ottawa, plus airfare, hotel, and a little spending money. Visit cherrybomb.com to enter. So today's first guest is an old friend of Cherry Bomb's, even though she's only 21 years old. Izzy Hossack is the founder of the popular UK blog Top With Cinnamon, which she started when she was a high school student in London. Her first book came out in 2014, and her second cookbook is out right now. Called The Savvy Cook, it's all about maximum flavor with minimum effort and not breaking the bank. And she is here to tell us all about it. Izzy Hossack, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How are you? Long time no see, babe.
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
It's been a while. I've done a lot of living in the past few years since I've seen you. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah.
You're in college now.
Mm-hmm.
When I saw you, you were just wrapping up high school, I think, right?
Yeah, I was in my gap year, I think, the last time I saw you. So, yeah, it's been 2 years now, and I've got one more year left of uni left, and
uni.
Then I'm done.
It's funny, when I was reading, I don't know, whatever you wrote somewhere on social media, and you said uni, I was like, uni? I was
like,
she's
unicorns?
Uni? And I was like, no, she's talking about college.
Yeah, yeah.
How are you finding college?
It's good. It's difficult, but yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying my course. It's interesting. I'm doing food science and nutrition, so it's still food-based. So yeah, very interesting.
Have you made friends?
Yes, I have.
That's always important.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way, it's more important than what you study or the grades you get,
I think so too.
It's the friends you make and
the experience.
The experiences.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Absolutely. Yeah. How has studying nutrition and food science changed what you do on the blog?
Well, at the beginning, I thought that it would make me kind of less likely to post things about like baking and whatever, because I thought, you know, people will see me as a nutritionist and be
ice
like,
cream sandwiches. I saw that on your Instagram.
Always, yeah. So I thought that they would be like, oh, she's a nutritionist. Why is she still making cakes and cookies and that kind of stuff? But I think it's kind of given me more of an idea about, you know, like, it's not about cutting things back, you know, it's about having a balanced lifestyle. And, you know, you still need to eat cake and cookies. I say that you need to nourish your body and your soul. So, you know, you need to have the vegetables, the whole grains, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you still want a cake, have a cake. So, yeah.
It seems what's maybe changed things more is how you have to cook now.
Yeah.
Because I was reading, you share an apartment with a bunch of other people.
Yeah.
You know, budget is a consideration. Mm. So how has being at uni changed your approach to cooking?
Yeah, it's definitely changed it a lot, because before I was only cooking occasionally. Like, I kind of learned how to cook from my mum, so I knew basics and, you know, I could follow a recipe, that kind of stuff. But going to uni and having to cook for yourself every single day and have to budget yourself, and, you know, you don't want to be wasting time, so you don't want to be standing in the kitchen going, I don't know what to make. So, yeah, it's changed a lot, because I started to menu plan, and I was actually, like, cooking recipes from books for the first time, because I'd always do that thing where, you know, you flick through a book and then you never make anything. So for this, I was actually going through books and writing a menu plan for the week, and it helped me stick to a budget so I could actually shop, and it helped me cut down time. So I was actually choosing what I was going to make and doing that ahead of time. And it helped me cut down my food waste as well, because it meant that I wasn't just buying random things and I could plan when I was going to use things up as well.
I read a few good tips that you had. One was you always make extra. And that's so smart.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
Huh, why don't I think of that?
Yeah, I always do that so that I have something for lunch the next day, because otherwise I just end up eating something like a fried egg with toast. And I'm like, I need some vegetables, okay? But I can never be able to cook them again. So if I roast some extra vegetables, it's always easy.
And you're eating less meat?
Yeah.
On purpose? For budgetary reasons? All of the above?
Yeah, it's kind of budget reasons, because as soon as you add animal products into the mix when you're budgeting stuff, it always brings the price up a lot more. So I spend about £20 a week on my own food. And I think if I started adding meat into the mix, if I'm buying like high quality meat, which is what I'd want to buy from like a butcher, then it's going to get way more expensive. So I just save it for when I'm going home, and I have it occasionally if I'm like in a restaurant or something like that. But it's also kind of like an environmental thing for me too. So, you know, I'd rather just eat meat occasionally and have really good high quality stuff. And then the rest of the time, just focus on vegetables and legumes and whole grains and that kind of stuff.
So back to the roasting vegetables, because I'm obsessed with roasting vegetables. Yeah. Any good tips?
Well, something I've seen is people saying that if you cut your vegetables up and then you leave them on a baking tray and you put them, I think, in the fridge, I think overnight, just before you're going to roast them, it helps the moisture kind of evaporate out of them. And then when you roast them the next day, they get a bit like crispier. So if you kind of prep ahead of time, it actually helps you.
Did you test this theory?
I haven't tried it yet, but I have heard that.
I want your tips. Your tips. I think that sounds interesting in principle. Maybe we'll try that. But yeah, what are your tips?
I think that if you can prep things at the beginning of the week, so I'll cut up like sweet potatoes, cauliflower, broccoli, like all that kind of stuff, and just roast a few trays of that, then you can keep those in Tupperwares in the fridge, and then you can put them back into the oven if you're roasting something else later and have that fresh, or even saute it up with something, or, you know, like have a hash kind of thing going on, or even just mix it into like frittata, because I make frittatas all the time because that's a really easy thing to do. So yeah, just having like prepped things that you've got in separate Tupperwares is a really good thing to do on a Sunday, I think.
So what is different about this book, mm-hmm. The Savvy Cook, versus your first one, which was named for your blog, Top with Cinnamon?
Yeah, so the first book was kind of based on like family style recipes that I'd had growing up, or things that I'd changed and adapted. So it was like my own baking recipes and just like classics from my family, really. So it was an extension of the blog, I guess, in that kind of way. Whereas with this book, it's been more about inspired by my time at university. So it's actually, you know, when you are cooking for one or two people, how you can approach it in a way that's going to help you like not waste time, not waste your money, and also helps you kind of plan for the future too, because I've got this kind of leftover slant to all the recipes where at the bottom of each recipe there's a little box and it tells you what you might have left over at the end of the recipe. So if you're cooking for one person or two people, you always have like, well, I always have like an open bag of baby spinach in the fridge, and if you leave that for 3 days in the fridge, the next time you look at it, it's turned to slime. So you kind of need to plan ahead and figure out what you're going to do. So you can then flick to the back of the book and it has a whole table in there, and it tells you all the ingredients, like fresh things or niche ingredients like tahini or miso or something like that. And it tells you all the other recipes that you could use that ingredient in. So you can kind of menu plan day to day. So you don't have to make as much of a big commitment at the like start of the week and sit down for like an hour trying to menu plan. So I think it's helpful in that kind of way.
No, that's a great tip. It's the same as trying to plan what you're going to wear.
Yeah.
All week. I find if you can plan your food and plan your wardrobe, that's...
You're set.
You're set for the whole week. It's going to be a good week.
Yeah.
Do your roommates feel like they won the roommate lottery?
Well, actually, it's quite funny. Both the people who I live with are on the same course as me. So we're all really into food. So we all cook a lot. Like we always cook our meals together. So sometimes I'll cook something for myself, or they'll be cooking something together. And then I'll, you know, like get in on the action because I haven't done food shopping yet. Or, you know, we'll cook together and have like, we made like dumplings. So we did, you know, the dumpling wrappers and everything, and we pan fried them and then had noodles and stuff with that. So yeah, it's fun.
I don't even want to tell you what I ate in college. I remember, oh my gosh, I lived with a bunch of guys my second semester junior year. And I'd just come back from Paris, and I sort of wanted to stay in Paris the whole year, but then it didn't work out. So I hadn't really made plans for where I would live when I came back to college. So I lived with three of my guy friends. And we went, I think it was like first day of school, we drove to the supermarket and there was a sale on ramen, like dry ramen noodle things. So we just bought as many of them as we could carry and put them in the cabinets. And a mouse broke into them and chewed through every single one, but took like a little nibble out of each one. And that was our food for the month. You know, we were like, oh, no. So it was kind of a bummer. Yeah. Food was very different back then.
Yeah. Well, I mean, students still eat a lot of instant ramen and kind of pot noodle stuff. I can tell you that much.
That's a classic, right?
Yeah.
So you're traveling around the United States to promote the book. You started in Boston. Did I read that?
Yeah. Because my grandma lives in Beverly. So we went to see her. And then I did a little book signing in Beverly. And now we're here in New York.
So what's the itinerary?
So I went to Dean and DeLuca on Wednesday, I think, or Tuesday, and just did like a little thing for their Facebook page. And then I'm here today doing your podcast.
Are you going to the West Coast, or do you have any fun travels planned?
No, we're just doing New York, and then I'm going back because my book's coming out in the UK next week, so I have to get back and do stuff there. And also I have to go back to Leeds and move all my stuff into my new house, so it's a very stressful time.
So you're at the University of Leeds?
Yeah, so I'm kind of up north.
Okay.
North of London, yeah.
And so what are your plans for the summer?
I'm hoping to go to Copenhagen for a few days.
Are you going to Copenhagen? Yeah. Do you want to write a story for us?
Yes.
Are you really going for a few days?
Yeah,
where you have time to do stuff?
Yeah. Because we're doing all food and beer stuff. Because I'm going with my boyfriend and he's really into craft beer. So it's perfect because the beer places usually have good food. And then the food places usually have good beer. So
I actually might have an assignment I need you to do.
Oh,
and
great.
It's so funny. I was thinking today, like, okay, I don't have a budget to send somebody to Copenhagen. I was like, who do I know who can do this Copenhagen story? And there we go. Bingo.
Yeah.
So you put it out to the universe and it works out.
Yeah.
So I was laughing thinking about the last time you were here and what happened. Do you remember?
Oh, with the pie. Oh, my God.
So Izzy came to New York and were you one of our Cherry Bomb It Girls?
Yeah, because the first issue.
When we used to do that column.
Yeah.
I miss that. We have to bring that back. It was like a spotlight sort of like young up-and-comers, future superstars. And so Izzy said, I'm coming to New York. I'm going to meet you guys. So we meet up in my neighborhood. And since Izzy loved baking so much, I said, we have to go to 420 Blackbirds.
Yeah, because it was really new then, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was newish and just wonderful. Like,
yeah.
Nobody makes, in my opinion,
the best pie.
They're the best pies, yeah. So I borrowed my boyfriend's car and his rental car, and we drove over there, and we're like, we're just going to run in and get some pie. And, you know, it's in Gowanus, so there's nothing over
there.
Well, at the time, but now it's like there's a lot more going on over there. So park the car, we run in, we get some pie, we walk back out to the car. The car is gone.
It's completely gone, yeah.
And we didn't know, had it been stolen? Was it towed?
Has it been towed? What's happened? And also, because you were going away for the weekend, this was on a Friday or something, wasn't it? Or Thursday?
Yeah, I forget the exact details.
Because you needed the car.
But then
for that.
I had to pretend the car hadn't been towed for a while. Oh, and then I tried to get the car out of the pound.
Oh, yeah, because Gabby had to like phone up all the impound lots, being like, do you have this?
I forgot Gabby Vigoro was involved in this, in the hijinks. So we finally tracked down the car, but I couldn't get it released because it wasn't rented in my name, so I had to fess up that the car. Uh-huh. And it's like hundreds of dollars later. I mean, it's not for the weak or the broke to get your car towed in New York.
It was literally like 15 minutes we were in there because we literally just went in to get pie and then came out.
Yeah. I was like, damn.
It was sneaky.
I still think about that. I was like, arr.
Yeah.
You know, in Gowanus of all places. I mean, there in front of the Cherry Bomb office yesterday, somebody just double parked their car and left a note in the window and was like, if you need me, I'll be back. And then nobody could get down the block.
Oh,
and I was like, and they just left their car there for like an hour.
Uh-huh.
Oh, but we got towed getting pie. Speaking of 420 Blackbirds, I need to check in on them because this is about the time, I think, when they start to do that sour cherry pie.
Oh, I've never had that.
We've had Emily Elson, one of the founders, on the show to actually just talk about life and pie.
Mm.
And that pie is just unbelievable. Sour cherries are so unique, and sour cherry pie is so unique, and theirs is so beautiful. The cherries really stay intact. They look like, little cherry tomatoes.
Cherry pies always look so nice, don't they?
Gorgeous. Yeah. But sour cherries are really in short supply. And
I don't think I've ever had them.
Some years the season's terrible. Some years it's pretty decent, but it's always just a small, production.
Yeah.
So I need to find out if that pie is happening this year. So what else? What else can we talk about? What are you loving these days? I know that's the biggest question in the world. Let me try to be more specific. All right, let's go back. You said you actually were now flipping through cookbooks and following recipes,
yeah,
as opposed to just flipping through cookbooks because they're cool to flip through.
Yeah.
What are some that you're looking to? What are some favorites of yours right now?
Well, a favorite author of mine is Anna Jones. Yeah. Like, I mean, I feel like everyone feels the same. She's amazing. Her recipes are just really inspiring. And because I was like kind of a new vegetarian or like flexitarian kind of person, her recipes are really a good starting point because they're very accessible and they're really interesting as well. It's not just, oh yeah, okay, you're a vegetarian, here's a mushroom risotto, yay, you know.
Here's some toast.
And they're really nourishing as well. She doesn't just go like really carb heavy or really like veg heavy. It's, you know, really balanced and really inspiring. And she's not like, oh, I'm doing everything low sugar, dairy free, blah 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 kind of stuff. You know, it's, you know, like everything. It's not exclusionary of anything.
You know, I met Anna Jones for the first time on my trip to London.
Oh wow!
Last month.
Yeah.
You were too busy to meet with me, but other people, you know.
I think I had exams.
I'm teasing. You had
then.
Exams.
Yeah.
You had a really good excuse. But I got to meet all these women I love who I've never met before. Mm. So Anna Jones and I had breakfast. She's so charming. If you're a fan of her books, I think her charm really comes through in her books. She is just like that in person.
Definitely.
Which is really nice.
Yeah.
I had such a good time in London.
Yeah. Where did you go?
Oh, gosh. She took me to the coolest little place right near Rochelle Canteen. Mm-hmm. It's like across the street from Rochelle Canteen. And there's like a little grocery next door, and then it's like a little shop. Mm-hmm. It's very you. I have to find the name. Sorry, people, I don't know the name of it, but I'll look it up. Went to Rochelle Canteen with Maxine from Polka Pants.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah, I've
Katie
got some
Quinn.
Polka Pants.
You do have Polka Pants? Do you have the polka dot ones?
No, I've got the houndstooth ones.
Oh, they're cute too.
Yeah. I had to get my mom to tailor them for me. So.
Why'd you lose
I
weight?
All the time. No, I have a big butt, so I always have that problem where like, it fits the butt and then the waist is like way too big. So I always have to get her to like tuck the waist in for me. But it's great because she has always had the same problem. So she's very skilled at doing it.
It's good to have a mom who's handy like that.
Yeah.
So went with Maxine and Katie Quinn and Melissa Hemsley, and we had a great time.
Yeah.
And Rochelle Canteen is amazing.
I haven't been there.
You put it on your list. You have to go. It's
definitely.
It was just really fun. I feel like they pretty much had to drag us out of there. It was a beautiful sunny day, and we didn't want to leave.
Keep ordering drinks.
Yeah. And Margot Henderson is just a genius. I think it was BYOB. We brought, everybody brought some wine. Where else did I go? Sky Gringle did a pop-up when I was there.
Nice. Was it spring? Or was it
It was next door. It was next door. And it was similar to, I don't know if you followed it, when Dan Barber, the big chef here, did that Wasted
Selfridges
pop-up. Yeah. And it was, did he do it in Selfridges too?
I think it was, or maybe it wasn't in Selfridges. I thought it was in Selfridges and like the food hall, but I know that everyone going.
Very well could have been. So it was kind of inspired by that, you know, the sort of bits that are left over that you just wind up throwing out in the kitchen.
Yeah.
She made this like really beautiful, fun feast. And it was great. It was sort of family style. We met all these really nice people. I went to Hemsley and Hemsley's Cafe
at
Selfridges.
Yeah.
Which was a lot of fun. We
love
those two.
Yeah.
And you know what I saw that blew my mind? The Ned? Do you know this thing?
Oh, yeah. I went to get poke
the other day.
It's amazing, isn't it, inside?
So the Ned, I'm not going to do this justice, but I think it's a project by the Soho House people. Mm. And it is just, if you know Grand Central, imagine a Grand Central Station-sized building.
Yeah, it's insane.
With just dozens of restaurants, secret bars, private club areas, a spa, a spectacular rooftop overlooking St. Paul's Cathedral. I mean, I just couldn't believe it.
It's incredible.
It was jaw-dropping. Yeah. And you walk in and there's this raised band shell and there was this jazz quartet playing. Mm-hmm. And everything is just like really kind of chic and posh. And it was really drop dead impressive. I think
it cost,
I mean, not to be American and talk about what everything costs, but I think it was like a £250 million or dollar project.
Wow.
It looked it.
Yeah, it definitely, I could understand that. Yeah.
So you had poke there. Was that at,
Fire.
The, Well, whose place was that?
It's called Kaya.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and they do, I think they do like breakfasty kind of acai bowl kind of stuff. And then for lunch, they have poke bowls. So they have like tuna or salmon, or I think you could get a vegetarian option as well, which is, I think, avocado and like papaya and stuff.
Poke is so trendy. Yeah. I can't do the poke thing.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's done. It's over.
No, you know what it is? I think I'm trying to eat a little less fish and especially less tuna.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just worry now that there's like a poke restaurant on every corner.
Oh, yeah. So
in
it's
New
kind
York City.
Of getting a bit crazy.
Yeah. I don't know if it's taken off to the same extent in London, but
it's getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The one place I didn't get to that I'm really bummed about is Violet Bakery.
Mm-hmm. I know. I've never been because my parents live in West London and I've grown up in West London. And going to East London is quite a trek. So I do go, but I've never actually been to Violet Bakery. So I need to go then. Apparently they've got really good cinnamon buns.
Ooh. So either go for me or we'll go next time I'm in London.
Yeah,
and hopefully
definitely.
I'll be back soon because we are thinking about doing a Jubilee. Well, not thinking. We are going to make it happen.
What?
Do a Jubilee in London next
Amazing.
Year.
Amazing.
Do you want to be part of it?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm always in London looking at the Instagrams in New York being like, I need to go. And it's always when I have exams as well. So I can't even be like, oh, it's fine. I'll just, you know, not go to uni for a week. I'll catch up kind of thing. I can't even come.
We'll run the date past you before we plan it. But you have such a wonderful, there's such a wonderful group of women in the food scene.
Yeah.
Over there.
Definitely. And everyone's really lovely as well to each other. You know, everyone kind of helps each other out and lifts each other up as well, which is just really nice to see because sometimes you see women kind of tearing each other down, I guess, in other industries. So I think in the food industries, everyone's well fed and happy. So, you know, willing to help each other out.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah.
So what are some favorite recipes from the Savvy Cook? If people pick up the cookbook, what's the first thing they should make?
Yeah, I keep telling people about this because it's kind of a hidden secret recipe. Is this chorizo dip that I've got in there. So it's in with two other dip recipes, so that's why it's a bit hidden, and it's in like the first chapter. And it's like chorizo in, you know, commas, because it's vegetarian. So it's with like kidney beans and sun-dried tomatoes and fennel seed and miso, because I'm obsessed with miso. And you blitz it all up with like loads of smoked paprika. And you get this kind of chorizo-like dip that I use in sandwiches, or I blob it into like frittatas, or I put it on pizza, or you can just have it with like an egg on toast. It's really like versatile and delicious, and everyone that's tried it loves it. So that's definitely a good one.
What's the miso obsession?
I think the thing with vegetarian cooking is sometimes you can lack that like umami flavor, which is like the savory meatiness. And so you need the, you know, like the MSG kind of aspect to things. And miso just has that like savoriness to it, kind of like soy sauce and sun-dried tomatoes do. And I think like seaweed does, like kombu. So you just need like a little hit of that, or like even Marmite, which I know some people will hate, but I really like adding that to like vegetarian bolognese because it adds that savory deepness.
Oh, I never thought about using Marmite. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really good.
What kind of miso do you use? I go to the store and there you'll see like lots of, there's white miso, brown miso. What do you prefer?
I use the darker miso, because I think that if you start out using the white light miso, then you probably get more used to the flavor because the dark stuff is quite intense. But the light stuff is quite sweet and just a little bit savory. And it's really good in dressings too. So that's a good way to kind of introduce yourself to it. And then if you see that you like that, then you can start buying like the darker misos and using those because they are very strong. So you have to kind of build yourself up to it, I guess.
I see you have a cauliflower miso mac and cheese.
Yes.
That sounds great.
Really good.
How'd you come up with that one?
Well, in England, you have cauliflower cheese. I don't know if it is it a thing in America? Cauliflower cheese. So it's literally you boil cauliflower and then you make a very, very cheesy sauce, pour it over the top, put more grated cheese on top, and then you bake it. And then you have that with like roasts, so like roast chicken or whatever. And my dad always used to make that, and I was obsessed with it growing up. And then I guess it's kind of the combination of cauliflower cheese and macaroni cheese. And then again, because I was just putting miso in everything, I was like, why not? Add a saltiness, you know?
Oh, this looks really good. I might have to try that one. I'm obsessed with mac and cheese, so. Anyway, the cookbook looks great, Izzy. It's
Thank
really
you.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, you too.
So I hope you have a fun visit here, even though it's so short. And what are you doing tonight?
I'm doing signing at Verde.
Unfortunately, this is we pre-recorded this, so the folks are going to miss you. But we can. What time? Well, I mean, we can talk about it afterward. We'll put it on our social media.
And
tell people that you're going to be there. But it's always really fun catching up with you.
Yeah, you too.
We'll have to have our next big good adventure in London, I guess.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
All right. Well, congrats about the cookbook. It's called The Savvy Cook by Izzy Hossack. You can find it in bookstores now.
Yeah.
And make sure to follow Izzy on Instagram. She's always got the most beautiful food photos.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. We'll be right back with Julia Sherman of Salad for President. Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle de Stael. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've ever dreamed of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to start living that dream. Check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short vacation or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, online registration, and to discover which school is best for you. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu. Our next guest is Julia Sherman of Salad for President, the website that celebrates the intersection of food and art. Julia is also the creative director of Chopped, the fast casual salad restaurant found on the East Coast. Lots of locations in New York, I know that. And we are so happy to welcome her to Radio Cherry Bomb for the first time.
Second time.
Oh, second time.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you've been on the show already. When were you on the show?
It was like a really long time ago.
Wow. Was I even hosting it, or was it Julia Tertian?
No, Julia Tertian.
Oh,
wow. It was right when I did my salad garden at MoMA PS1.
I remember. We came to visit it.
Yes.
I remember that. The air smelled like a chocolate factory.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, why does it smell like a chocolate factory? And you said...
Because I had pilfered all of Mass Brothers' discarded cocoa husks and used it as my mulch because I had very little budget. So that was a free and very fragrant mulch.
Way to option. Reuse, repurpose,
yes.
et cetera. Yeah. Well, I'm thrilled to talk to you. We were joking in our little green room that I'm just a huge fan of yours, and we never really get to like sit and have a conversation. We see each other at clothing swaps.
Right.
We see each other at Jubilee, at all these different things.
Yeah.
So it's nice to actually sit down and have a 20-minute conversation
with
you. So how's life?
It's good. It's been really busy, which is such a New York answer. But, you know, writing a book is a very kind of like private thing to do, and then all of a sudden it's in the public and you have to talk about it a lot and be in many places at once, and it's all good stuff, but it's a serious gear shift.
So the Salad for President cookbook is out right now, and if you haven't seen it, it really is one of the best cookbooks of the year.
Thank you.
Easily.
That's
sweet. When people look back on 2017 and all the cookbooks that came out, I think definitely yours, definitely Samin Nosrat's. It's just a beautiful book,
and
everybody knows we have our cookbook coming out in October, and I look at yours and I'm so jealous.
Oh, stop it.
So jealous. Well, you actually got to write. I mean, it is one of those cookbooks that you know, it's the same reason I love Samin's. Like, you can really sit
and
spend time and read it. So why don't you tell us a little bit about just what makes your cookbook unique?
Well, for me, it was also really exciting because the blog is based off making salads with artists and the different interesting people that I decide to feature. And for all of those salads, we develop a recipe together, but primarily the idea for the salad or the recipe comes from the person that I'm featuring. So the book was also a really nice way to feature my own recipes. So there's 75 of my own recipes in there that are all different kinds of salads, and it's pretty loose definition. So there's soups and there's drinks and there's desserts, and but all with a salad perspective, which means that there's a lot of produce and a lot of herbs, and if things are very colorful, and it's very much about presentation. So there are 75 of my recipes, and then I featured 11 artists that are pretty much all over the world. I mean, they're in Mexico, Japan, California, kind of, you know, pretty diverse. And
you've got everybody from Laurie Anderson,
right,
who I love,
yes,
to Alice Waters,
right, and some Japanese artists, some Mexican artists. So the idea was that for those people, it's very much the same format as the blog. I come to their home, I shoot them in their home, I develop a recipe with them, and shoot the food in, you know, in the context of their home, and then the rest of it is really shot in a studio, and I did all the photography myself and worked with some really great ceramicists and artists to make all the props. And so it's just a big collaborative effort. But I think, you know, the idea was basically that you could pick this up or it could as a coffee table book and really dive into it to read about artists and read about these sort of like intimate alternative snapshots of them through the lens of salad. Or you can pick it up because you just were really bored of your mesclun greens and you want a new weird approach to, you know, making a salad that maybe is through like a cool ingredient you've never heard of or whatever. So,
and this is a very Brooklyn story, but Emma Straub, the author who just opened that wonderful bookstore, mm-hmm. Books Are Magic, mm-hmm. she and I crossed paths on a Brooklyn bike path, as one does, and we stopped and we were talking, and I guess you had just done a book signing there, and we were just totally fangirling on your cover.
Oh, that's so sweet. I think anyone who's made a book, I mean, it's a very internal conversation, but you know, the book cover process of landing on a book cover is extremely painful, and for most people, editors included, for sure. So I actually made a zine that I've had at some of my events, and we had it at the Books Are Magic event, which is a catalog of the hundreds of covers that were rejected, and then an essay I wrote just sort of about that process and how you can really make a book and spend 2 years writing it and thinking about everything that goes inside. And when it comes to the point when you have to decide what goes on the cover, you realize you really haven't articulated who's your audience and who you want to sell this to. So, you know, you want to sell it, but you also, you know, you want to keep it true to the original spirit. So, you know, and these days you have to also think most of the time somebody's going to see this as a thumbnail on Amazon or on their phone. And so that changes the opportunity for nuance and subtlety is, you know, pretty much blown out of the water that way. So we're really happy that we came up with the cover we did, but it was not looking good for a while.
And who did the illustrations?
My friend Joanna Avalez.
Oh, Joanna did those. Yes. She's done work for us. She's so talented.
She's the best. We just did a talk together at Space 98, which was, we were joking, was just us sitting in front of an audience talking about how much we love each other. But we have like lived these parallel lives. We both grew up in Manhattan. We both grew up with mothers who were artists. We both went to RISD. We had the same mentor. It wasn't until she came to a party at my house as a date, someone's date, and she saw both of our professor was at the party, and she was like, "What are you doing here? We figured it out. We've just been in each other's orbit for all this time." And the book was, I mean, we only met each other a year ago. So we've traveled to Vietnam. We've made a book together. We've done all these things. And it's a nice little document of like the beginning of what I hope is a very long friendship.
What a small world. That's a great story. You went to Vietnam. That's my favorite place.
Is it your favorite place?
Oh my gosh.
It's my second time. I really love it there.
The food is, first off, the people are just really wonderful.
Right.
And it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And the food is mind blowing.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the markets are unlike anywhere else. I also am particularly fond of the fashion sense, the like pajama style. Women wear these mismatched pattern on pattern pajama sets with flesh colored socks and sandals and then straw hats. It's basically how I dress, I think, but just like, you know, really more socially acceptable.
And did you notice that women run the food world in Vietnam?
Yes. Yeah.
I almost think that the guy, I can count on one hand how many guys I saw. The markets are run by the women.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the best meal, I think. What's one of the best meals I've ever had in my life was in Da Nang. And it was,
Love Da Nang.
I love Da Nang too. People mm-hmm. really don't tell you to go there. Mm-mm. They tell you not to go there. And it's a very weird, people really steer you towards the colonial towns and more picturesque places that, but they're kind of missing the point about Vietnam. And so I, you know, we had gone to Hoi An and I was like, oh, how did I end up making this mistake again? You got to go to the places.
Oh, I do like Hoi An though. The best food I ever had was definitely Hoi
really?
An. Yeah.
Huh. Those, okay. I should have asked you.
Khao Lao noodles. Okay. This is so random. It's just this one lady on the street who makes them, but we actually managed to find her on our first trip and our second
Whoa.
Trip. And then it's so touristy, but the banh mi shop that's Anthony Bourdain's yeah. favorite banh mi shop in Hoi An
yeah.
really does
it
make
really
the best banh mi on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can go wrong, but I think a lot of that food for me is it's so clean and straightforward. And I also am just totally into the idea of these restaurants that only serve one thing. So there's no menu. You just sit down and food starts coming and you have beer and you have bun xiao and you have, you know, they bring you the same meat. Everyone gets the same thing. It's super democratic and it means that they are just like mastering that individual dish. And it just makes so much sense from a restaurant standpoint too. Like imagine if you could run a restaurant and you only serve one thing.
I think it would get boring. No, it would get
boring.
Well,
you wouldn't want to be the chef. But,
right. It's amazing for the guest
right.
because, you know, when you have a restaurant, you start to learn that guests sometimes crave nothing more than consistency.
Right.
And being able to go and get their favorite dish time
yes.
and time again and not have it change at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the
chef.
Crew, that's pretty brutal.
Right. I think it's just the kind of like focus that, you know, and then you kind of go to that place and you're like, they know they're experts at this one thing. I love that kind
of perspective. Well, it is very
zen. Yeah.
I mean, if you apply that right. perspective to it, I guess. So you mentioned your mom. You very generously gave us a recipe for the cookbook. It's your mom's Brussels sprout Caesar salad
mm-hmm.
recipe. And you said something cute that when your mom made a salad with raw Brussels sprouts, you just thought she was an absolute genius.
Yeah.
And you and I were joking that maybe your mom was the one who kicked off the
Brussels
shaved
sprout.
Brussels sprout
right.
salad trend.
Right. This was a long time ago. Yeah.
So I didn't realize your mom was an artist.
She is an artist. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, all the women in my art family have been artists. So her mother was a fashion designer, and my father's mother is a sculptor, and my mom's a painter. She draws, she designs light fixtures, she makes furniture, she does textiles. She's very technical. Where I lack technique, she's got it. So I'm not sure I picked that necessarily up from her, but she's amazing at making things with her hands.
So how did you, with all this artistic blood coursing through your veins, how did you wind up channeling your art into salad?
It's a salad. I don't know. I mean, I always wanted to cook for people. I think it's like the role of the host and definitely a different kind of artist. I never imagined myself as like a someone who worked alone in their studio and kind of, you know, tortured themselves over the making of an object for years and then finally released it into the public. You know, that never really appealed to me. So I think at a certain point, I realized that more than any one thing I was able to make, I was probably acting as it was the sort of role I was playing in the art world that was my work. So I always was organizing critique groups and dinners, and my husband and I ran a gallery in LA that we started just in the front of our studio, and that all just came really naturally to me. And I don't know, maybe it was also the freedom of not ever considering it a job, and that, you know, I was always doing all these other things for work, that it sort of was just like flowing. And, you know, when I turned 30, I basically like stepped back and was like, all right, what are the things I'm doing really naturally and without anybody asking me to, or without any pressure? And cooking was always that for me. And the salad thing, I think, is just like, and part of it is just being an artist and having a really intense appreciation for material and feeling like that's salad's all about. Like, it's almost like a minimalist approach to presenting food, you know, like you shouldn't have to do that much to it.
Why did you leave LA?
I came to New York to go to grad school. So I went to Columbia to get my master's in fine art, where I was in the new genres department, so sort of like a conceptual art program. And after 2 years, I was like, I hadn't really made any objects, and I was writing more and more, and everyone was very worried about me. And so, yeah, we moved back here so I could go to school, and we were supposed to head promptly back to L.A., which we haven't managed to do yet, but we're planning to now.
Because as the number one salad girl, your options are limited here certain times of the year.
You must
miss the farmers markets out there.
I miss the farmers markets. I miss being able to grow all year. I mean, you know, now I can grow in my yard in Brooklyn, but when we lived in LA, I grew food all year round, and it's definitely a lot easier. You know, you don't have to be very talented to have a vegetable garden there. So, yeah, we're planning to move back, and that's a big part of it, I think.
What do you grow in your garden here?
I have partial shade, so I've tried with tomatoes and peppers, and most fruiting plants have just been very stubborn with me. So I grow I grow mostly herbs and greens, and I have a service berry tree right now, which is like exploding with berries that nobody knows you can eat them, but they are all over New York.
What's it called?
Service berry. It's one of the trees I got for free from the city. You know, they have a NYC has a tree giveaway program, but there are these little berries, and they and the seeds, when you munch down on them, taste like almond extract. And I don't recommend everybody go out and put red berries in their mouth wherever they see them. That is a very bad idea. But if you know someone has a service berry tree, you can identify it with somebody who really knows, they are so delicious. And they're not like a big, bold flavor. So
wait, I grew up here. I don't even know what you're talking about.
You got to Google it. Okay. They're all over the place. So I have one in my backyard that's like exploding right now. So I've got that. I've got...
Can you cook with them? Can you do anything except just snack on them?
Sure. I'm sure you could. I mean, I haven't tried because I just love eating them plain. But yeah, I don't know. This year is the first year of my garden. I've had it 4 years that things really came back on their own. So I've got like lovage growing everywhere, and borage and horseradish and all these things that just like red vein sorrel that just do it on their own, which is great because I'm never home anymore.
So, how big is this yard?
It's like a standard Brooklyn backyard.
Oh,
it's
okay.
20 by 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's talk about your Chopped gig, because I think it's so exciting. I love when brands hire people as either editorial directors or creative directors, but not all brands are cool enough to do that. But Chopped is.
Yeah, they are.
How'd that gig come about?
Well, Tony, the founder, Tony Shore, when I first started the blog. So it was kind of amazing because none of us had a clear idea of what this job would be and how anyone would, besides me, would benefit from it. But Tony was just looking for hashtag salad on Instagram and found me and was like, who is this girl who's more obsessed with salad than we are, who's like creating all this content on her own. And, you know, it's one of those things that I feel like in this day and age, I know that people can say, you know, there's a lot of arguments against social media or how maybe it's, you know, the negative effects of it. But I do think that for someone like me, and I think there's a lot of us out there who have an excess of like creative energy, and that you're going to be making things and documenting them anyway, it's like it creates a portfolio for you where somebody can get a sense of like how intense you are and how much what your drive is and what your consistency is and your voice and your aesthetic and all of those things. So for me, like, you know, I only started doing social media like a few years ago, but it really worked for me. And so they found me that way, and they started sending me traveling to do research about ingredients and the themes that we use. Every 60 days, we feature a new destination. So they would send me those destinations. I created a blog for them, travel content, food content. And then that job really developed into creative director, which now we're working on a rebrand that's going to launch in the early fall. So we've been doing that for a really long time. And doing of all the new stores, we do these design collaborations with this team named Bada Basta in Barcelona to design custom wallpaper. And we're doing new uniforms and do events, and we could do things, partnerships like, you know, for the Cherry Bomb Jubilee, we did the food this year. So, and that was a Salad for President Chopped collaboration. So it's a really fluid, really like natural collaboration, but sometimes it's me making things for them. Sometimes it's us working as a duo. So it's a really interesting space to navigate. I've never had a job like that.
But it seems like you're super into it.
I love it.
Yeah.
If everyone in my office who's listening right now, I love my job. Every time I talk about my job, I'm worried I'm going to get fired because I'm like, could it really be this good?
Is that a girl thing? I always felt like I was going to get fired when I
really
had a job. Yeah.
It might be a girl
thing. I still do have a job when I had a job working for other people.
Right. I think it's also like I've had so many jobs where most of the jobs I've had were nobody wanted to know about my own projects or my own practice. Like they really actually would rather not know because they just want you to work for them and clock in and clock out, and anything else is a distraction. And this is the first time I've had a job where my value at the company is precisely that I'm here right now, that I'm flying to Austin, that I wrote a book, all of those things. It's like there's actually an understanding of how that is a feedback loop, you know? And so it just feels too good to be true because I'm like, you know, I don't know. It's a...
are definitely bringing...
Imposter syndrome.
I don't know if I felt like it was imposter syndrome because I felt like I was good at my job.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows? We could save that for another
right.
for another
session.
Show. Exactly. But you are definitely living the salad life.
I am.
In just such a unique, creative way. So I'm sure they're thrilled. And I love that they were just looking for hashtag salad.
It's so funny.
Because it's like people hashtag your dream. Who knows?
Somebody might
find it and make it come true.
Yeah. I just remember this conversation when I was like, oh, look, I'm just not sure what I want to do next with my life. And talking to my dad, who's very pragmatic. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to start this salad blog. He's like, that does not make any sense. And I don't know. How are you going to make money off of that? And I was like, I really don't know. He's like, you can have advertising. I was like, definitely not. And he's like, what? How you don't have any plan? And I was like, no, exactly. But it, you know, you just like pour yourself into something and you'll figure it out, you know, hopefully.
And you have more or less.
Yeah, more or less.
Make sure to check out Julia's new book, Salad for President. It is a gorgeous cookbook, whether you love food, cooking, art, or you just want to put some sexy hot book on your coffee table. It's good for that.
Book covers.
It's good for that too. Exactly. So thanks for joining us. It's always fun seeing you.
Thanks, Carrie.
That's it for today's show. Radio Cherry Bomb was engineered by the one and only Dave Tatasciore. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Dave. Le Cordon Bleu, for making this season of Radio Cherry Bomb possible. Don't forget our great Le Cordon Bleu sweepstakes going on right now. Have you entered? If you haven't, visit cherrybomb.com and click on the banner. You could win a trip to Paris, London, or Ottawa, plus culinary classes and some spending money and airfare and hotel, and just go enter. Don't forget the new issue of Cherry Bomb is out right now. You can find it in your favorite indie bookstore. You can order it online from us at cherrybomb.com, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and find a copy. Thank you for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
Carla Perez Gallardo.
And I'm Hannah Black.
And we're chef owners of Lil Deb's Oasis,
which is a restaurant in Hudson, New York.
Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network.
To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com.
You know who I think is the bomb?
Mona Talbot, who's the chef and owner of Talbot and Arding. It's a store and caterer based out of Hudson, New York.
She supports women and the arts, and she gets it.